When you hear the word requirement, I'm not sure where it takes you, but it takes me back to class. What are the requirements for the class? There may be optional things, but there are certain things that are required if you're going to pass, and you need to know those things, right? So as you do what's required in class, you earn a grade, or you earn at least passing the course. The word requirement here in Micah, though, has a little different cast to it. The word in Hebrew is darash, which means to go in search of, to yearn for, to long for. It's the same word we get midrash from, the Jewish process of entering into the world of Scripture and coming back with stories and proverbs and such as that. So we might not think of these requirements that Micah lists as things that earn God's favor, but rather they're responses to the fact that God has already loved us. And as people who have been loved and who have been told that we are loved, these are our responses. This is God's deepest longing for us, God's darash, God's desire for us and for the world. And what is that desire for the world? Well, the very first part of the passage you heard Kathy read outlines it pretty well. The weapons of war will be turned into weapons of agriculture. The things that have been used for destruction will now become things that are used to create and to nourish and to grow. That's God's vision for the world. And this requirement, this yearning, invites us to be a part of that vision of what God is doing in the world already. Now, the three things that Micah lists might need a little recontexting, too. First of all, justice. Here, he's not necessarily talking about a court system or punishing the guilty or acquitting the innocent, although he certainly has some harsh words to say for those he thinks are guilty. Rather, justice in Micah's terms means that everyone has what they need. Everyone has a place to stay that's warm and inside, food to eat that's nourishing and healthy, medical care when they need it, clothing to wear, clothing that's warm enough that they won't freeze in the kind of weather we've been having this past week. All the necessities of life will be shared with everyone. That's justice in Micah's understanding. Because you see, Micah was a country boy who came to the city. And what he saw in the city that was that the rich and the powerful, because they were rich and powerful, influenced the rulers so that they could become more rich and powerful at the expense of the poor. And what Micah said is, this is an injustice. This is not justice the way God sees it. And so Micah calls those of us who are privileged to share those privileges. The poor have no lobbyists. The rich and the powerful can hire folks to represent their interests, but the poor have only one lobbyist, and that is God, or God's people taking part in what God is doing. They have an advocate, a voice for those who are voiceless. That's justice, according to Micah's understanding. Kindness. This is an interesting word. It occurs throughout the Hebrew Bible. It's chesed. It's usually associated with God's love. We often translate it loving kindness. It is mercy. It is compassion. It is a step beyond justice. Justice means that everyone will have what they need in life. Loving kindness, or chesed, means that everyone will know that they are loved and cared for in this world. Mother Teresa, when she left the safety of her convent to go into the streets of Calcutta, did not go there to convert people. She went to simply sit with the dying because she believed that no one should die without knowing that someone cares for them, that someone loves them, to simply be present. So God's yearning for us, our response to God's love, is first of all to be sure that everyone is provided for, the basics of life. And then the next step is to make sure everyone knows they're not alone in this world, that there is a God who loves them, and that we as God's people will step up to be with them. And especially those who have been left out, pushed to the margins. And then to walk humbly. Interesting, very active verb, walk. It doesn't say to feel humble. It says to walk humbly. And humility has kind of gotten twisted in our day and time to mean a sort of subservience and putting oneself down. And unfortunately, those of us who are in a privileged position often preach humility to people who are already in a subservient position, which is completely inappropriate. No, humility in Micah's understanding might be better defined as the Buddhist concept mindfulness, to walk mindfully with God of the fact that we are not God, but we depend upon God and upon each other in every aspect of our lives. That's what humility is about, to recognize our dependence on God, our dependence on each other, and to walk in a way that allows us to offer the support that others need so they can depend on us as well. So how do we respond to God's love, God's great love? Well, we seek justice, that everybody might be provided for. We offer kindness, that everybody might know that they are loved. And we walk humbly with God, recognizing our limitations, our dependence on others, and offering for others to depend on us. As Kathy said earlier, this whole season of Lent, we're going to be looking at opportunities for us to do that. She mentioned the Legacy Campaign. Last year we had a very successful capital campaign. It will allow us to keep this building in good shape. But you know, that would be completely useless if this building did not serve as the place where we trained and prepared to go out into the world and do justice and show kindness and walk humbly with God. And so this year, what we're trying to do is, and this is a clunky word, I'm sorry I don't have a better word, is to have a human capital campaign so that we share our human capital, our time, which is very valuable, I know, our skills, our longings, our interests, to coordinate those with what God is longing for in the world. And so throughout Lent, you will be hearing opportunities and seeing opportunities in which you can do that very thing. Every week in the bulletin insert, you'll see different opportunities listed. Now, some of you do this already. Some of you are wonderful examples of this. Many of us may not know that because you do it without any fanfare. You do it simply as a course of your life. You do it because that's what followers of Jesus do. Our desire would be that each of us would find that way that we could do justice, offer kindness, walk humbly with God. And then during the Easter season, we'll be asking for your concrete commitments about how you're going to do that and live that out. Any of you who know me know that my favorite book of all time is To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. And when I read it as a teenager, I immediately knew that I wanted to grow up to be Atticus Finch. That didn't mean I wanted to grow up to be an attorney, necessarily. It wasn't a professional thing. I wanted to grow up to be the kind of man that Atticus Finch was in the book. Atticus Finch, you know this, I'm sure, because you were required to read it. Atticus Finch was asked to take on a case of an African-American man who was accused of sexual assault on a white woman. He could have said no. But he didn't. My guess is the judge offered him that case because he knew the kind of man he was. He took it in part because he believed that everyone deserved the best representation possible. And he was going to give the best representation possible. As the trial is prepared for and progresses, his daughter Scout gets into fights at school because some of her classmates call her very, very ugly things and call her father very ugly names. And she comes home and she asks him. She said, "Are we what they call us?" And he tells her, "No." He said, "We just are people who believe that everybody deserves to be represented and that I am defending a Negro." She said, "Will you win the case?" He says, "No. No, we won't win that case." And she asked the only logical question, "Why in the world would you take it on? Why would you take on a case that leads your neighbors to call you ugly names, leads your children to be abused at school? Why would you do that?" And he tells her, "If I didn't, I couldn't hold up my head as I walked through town. I couldn't represent the people of Macomb in the state legislature. And I couldn't tell your brother Jim and you not to do something. He would have lost all moral authority had he not chosen to do the right thing for the right reason." As you recall, he does lose the case. And one of my favorite scenes from the film, and this is one of the few films, I believe, that is equal to the book in its quality, in part because a man named Horton Foote wrote the screenplay. At the end of the trial, after Atticus is lost, he is gathering his things, and everyone on the ground floor of the courtroom is gone but him. But the balcony is still full, and the balcony is where the African-American population are required to sit. And it's still full. And with them are Jem and Scout, Atticus's two children. And as he prepares to walk out of the courtroom, one by one, all the African-American folks in the balcony begin to stand, until they're all standing except Jem and Scout. They've been sitting with the pastor up there, and the pastor leans down to Scout and he says, "Miss Jean Louise, Miss Jean Louise, stand up." She said, "Why?" He said, "Your daddy is passing." I believe whenever we find those ways to do justice, to offer kindness, to walk humbly with God, that God stands up and says, "My children are passing. May it be so for us."